I got a letter from the government the other day. I've been and read it and burned that. Man, the way that I live, don't concern that. Man, we don't have to settle this another way. A letter from the government the other day. I've been and read it.
Good morning. You're listening to WPWC React Radio 1480 AM. My name is Naveed Nasser.
And my name is Solomon Kamajan.
There we go. And the name of the show is Your World News. Solomon is my co-host. He's already introduced himself. The topic of today's show is going to be the legacy of Martin Luther King, the lasting legacy of Martin Luther King Jr., specifically as it relates to workers' rights, and also the struggle against war and imperialism. Salman, you want to start us off a little bit?
Sure. I think it's very, you know, appropriate, you know, 2 days after, you know, the anniversary of Dr. King's assassination, April 4th, 1968. You know, I think it's his words, you know, in lectures he gave on April 4, 1967, the Beyond Vietnam speech, Naveed, mm-hmm. I think are more relevant, you know, than ever, you know, given the fact that the U.S., you know, right now is currently, you know, tied up in various wars through Central Asia. You know, they just got through a, you know, with a bombing campaign and in Libya and brought on their sycophant, you know, partners, NATO, you know, to finish the nefarious death, you know, job that they did in Libya. And we know that they've been bombing, you know, places like Yemen and Somalia with manless drones. And so I think it's really relevant that we talk about Dr. King's life, because, you know, within that Beyond Vietnam speech, you know, Naveed, he mentioned the cruel reality is that, you know, these, you know, young men, these young black men are being sent over to fight in a war, you know, in Vietnam, you know, mm-hmm. to come back only to have, you know, to have an absence of the so-called rights that they were allegedly supposed to be fighting for in Vietnam. And we know that, you know, the U.S. wasn't fighting a war of democracy in Vietnam, but his point was they're coming back home to the U.S. or you know, to a place where it would still be riddled and still was riddled with injustices tied and anchored to institutional racism, white supremacy, and he also tied that in, you know, to the struggles of poor working class white people as well, to, you know, to try to elucidate a much brighter, you know, effulgent point that this affects you as all. You're also getting pimped by a very unforgiving system of inequities, you know, anchored to capitalism in your case. So, I think that this show is right on time, Naveed.
Right, absolutely, absolutely. The legacy of Martin Luther King as it relates to imperialism. Vietnam was an example of a hot war, a war where it was obvious what was going on. It was full-scale military intervention. All the armed forces unleashed tens of thousands of troops there at any given time. It's become a lot more refined, obviously, in the decades since then, and now it's actually more cost-effective to not necessarily put your own boots on the ground, but to do it via local proxies, to do it in other more subtle ways that aren't necessarily glaringly obvious to people who aren't really paying close attention. And we see that happening a lot. We see it happening in Somalia right now. We see it happening we've seen it happen in Honduras in recent years. There's been a movement to try to push that back. They're working on it, and God willing, they'll succeed. And we've seen them attempt to do the same thing in Venezuela. But one can only imagine what Dr. King would have to say about all this if he were alive today. Salman, what do you think he would have to say?
I mean, I think he would. Yeah. I think he would have a lot to say. But what he probably would say, you know, when he spoke of Beyond Vietnam, and he mm-hmm. referred to the U.S. government as the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, he would probably say that, you know, if he was still alive, saying that, you know, I said those words in 1967, and in 2012, mm-hmm. I never imagined that it would get worse. You know, the U.S. has become. You know, incredibly more violent, you know, and the propaganda scheme, I think being the critical thinker and the erudite that he was, that he would, you know, try to get people to wake up to the false propaganda, the illusion of democracy. Because so now what's going on, Naveed, and you referred to this, or alluded to this, is that now in 2012, yeah, the U.S., it's you know, they have some boots on the ground here and there, but their preferred method now is airstrikes and bombing campaigns by way of manless drones and taking lives that way. But the propaganda is one of the most effective tools, because people on the ground right here in the U.S. believe it. They actually believe, you know, whatever is told to them by the corporate media and what's ever told to them by the Pentagon and the State Department, they suck it up and they believe it and end up thinking that their government is actually fighting some war of democracy, you know, to bring, you know, about justice, where in fact it's the complete antithesis, Naveed. It is the complete antithesis. With, you know, it you know, when you have over 90% of people that are being killed in U.S. Military engagements being civilians, you know, how is that in any shape, form, or fashion bringing about justice? How is that in any shape, form, or fashion bringing about justice? It's not, you know, and these wars are fought on complete lies, like Libya, complete lies. Mm-hmm. You know, putting the lies out there about, you know what's going on in, you know, on the ground in Libya, and at the same time not telling you the whole breadth of what's going on, the whole breadth of the truth, you know, in terms of, you know, Libyans having you know, under Gaddafi's Jamhuria, having health care and dowries, $30,000 dowries for married couples, and free tertiary education and those kind of things, and the kind of support that he had in places like Tripoli. Mm-hmm. And now, Naveed, and I'll end on this, and you know better than anybody, Naveed, mm-hmm. Now it is literally a hellhole. It is a full-fledged civil war. I mean, people are getting, you know, knocked off. You have, you know, black Africans that mm-hmm. are being, you know, held like you know, literally like animals in a zoo.
Like zoo animals in cages, exactly.
To eat like, you know, green flags, and it's just awful. And during the campaign, those rebels, those CIA funded rebels, you know, what were they doing to be? They were lynching, literally lynching, and hacking off the limbs, and brutally raping, and cutting the breast off of black Africans, any black Africans they could find, because most black Africans in Libya supported Gaddafi because of what he did, his support, you know, for them, you know. So.
And I'll be honest, Solomon, even the black Libyans who did not support Gaddafi, and there's one tribe in particular that I'm thinking of in the south of Libya called the Toubou. They actually sided with the rebels in Libya, and it's come back to haunt them. Now the rebels are targeting them and trying to drive them out of Libya or slaughter them. And it's absolutely horrific what's going on in Libya. And as is usually the case, once the cameras go away, once the attention of the international media goes away, once victory has been achieved, however, in whatever way NATO and the West define victory, that's when the true slaughter and barbarism on the ground begins, and that is what is happening on the ground in Libya right now. And at the risk of sounding like a broken record, I know we've talked about this on this show before, those elements of the left that supported what went on in Libya and continue to support it should be absolutely ashamed of themselves. It's horrific what's going on, made even more horrific by the fact that intelligent people who should know better completely swallow hook, line, and sinker this whole humanitarian interventionist drivel that is passed as a justification for these atrocities.
You're right. And Naveed, and you know, to go back to another Dr. King quote is, you know, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And so these, you know, frauds, you know, those folks on the left that you were talking about that sucked up hook, line, and sinker, it's funny how selective they become. You know, there'll be some of the folks that will, you know, they'll latch themselves onto Dr. King's, you know, quotes and this, that, and the other when it's convenient, when, you know, at their speakouts and so forth. But, you know, it's what's interesting is, for some reason, you know, that you know, that phrase there, you know, injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, I guess doesn't apply what in places like Libya where they support that. So I guess that's not an injustice. I guess, you know, a country now that is literally in ruins, a city like Tripoli that is, you know, looks like Beirut in 1982 or 83, I mean, I guess that is that's not an injustice. I guess, you know, these people that no longer have the safety nets that allow them to study for free, not just in Libya but abroad, mm-hmm. I guess that's not, you know, that's not an injustice. And as you said, the convenience that those people have, you know, from their safe quarters, you know, within the U.S. empire, to be able to say those things, and now that the cameras, you know, and the microphones are withdrawn, mm-hmm. you know, now, you know, where are they in the rebuilding process? Oh, F them, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You know, they're on their own. Mm-hmm. Where are they, you know, in this rebuilding process where these people are literally living in rubble?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I appreciate your words, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks ago when we did a show on that, Naveed, and I appreciate your words now because, you know, calling out these so-called progressives on the left, mm-hmm. you know, so...
Salman, we talked about the message of Dr. King as it relates to what we're talking about right now, war and imperialism. Maybe now is a good time to actually listen to the words of Dr. Martin Luther King about that subject. Let's go to this clip where he talks about Vietnam, and let's bring it up to our current period. Let's go to that.
When silence is betrayal, that time has come for us in relation to Vietnam. Religious leaders have chosen to move beyond the prophesying of smooth patriotism to the high grounds of a firm dissent based upon the mandates of conscience and the reading of history. As I have called for radical departures from the destruction of Vietnam, I come to this platform tonight to make a passionate plea to my beloved nation. Connection between the war in Vietnam and the struggle I and others have been waging in America. A few years ago, there was a shining moment in that struggle. It seemed as if there was a real promise of hope for the poor, both black and white, through the poverty program. There were experiments, hopes, new beginnings. Then came the build-up in Vietnam. And I watched this program broken and eviscerated as if it was some idle political plaything of a society gone mad on war. And I knew that America would never invest the necessary funds or energies in rehabilitation of its poor so long as adventures like Vietnam continued to draw men and skills and money like some demonic destructive suction tube. So I was increasingly compelled to see the war as an enemy of the poor and to attack it as such. Perhaps a more tragic recognition of reality took place when it became clear to me that the war was doing far more than devastating the hopes of the poor at home. It was sending their sons and their brothers and their husbands to fight and to die in extraordinarily high proportions relative to the rest of the population. We were taking the black young men who had been crippled by our society and sending them 8,000 miles away to guarantee liberties in Southeast Asia, which they had not found in Southwest Georgia and East Holland. So we have been repeatedly faced with the cruel irony of watching Negro and white boys on TV screens as they kill and die together for a nation that has been unable to seat them together in the same schools.
Powerful words from Dr. Martin Luther King. We need to go to a break right now. We'll be right back, and we'll talk about what we just heard and analyze it within the context of the present day. So let's go to the break, and we'll be right back in a couple of minutes.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
Friends, David Schuster here, and all of us at We Act Radio are so proud of our neighbors here in Southeast D.C., especially one of our partners, The Arc. The Arc is at 1901 Mississippi Avenue Southeast. It's the home to some of Washington's best, including the Washington Ballet, the Levine School of Music, Boys and Girls Club, and the Children's Health Project. All provide a number of programs and services within the very same facility. The Arc is also home to the Arc Theater, the only theater east of the river, which hosts a variety of dance, music, and theatrical shows each year. Almost everything you could want is at the Arc, so stop by and see them. The Arc, 1901 Mississippi Avenue in Southeast. For more information, visit the Arc's website, www.thearcdc.org, or call 202-889-5901. The Arc, part of Southeast D.C.
My name is Joe Thompson. I'm 29 years old and I have a career that I love as a systems analyst. Career. It still sounds cool to say that word. I never could have gotten on this path without a college degree. And if the college me were here, he'd tell you.
I never would have gotten to college without big brothers, big sisters. I could have ended up anywhere, on the streets even. But college? Joe Thompson? Not likely. My big brother helped me out. He taught me I could do anything. At a time when a lot of people were saying just the opposite.
And to a 7-year-old, that means a lot. My big brother's name is Phil. And Phil is the reason that this 7-year-old grows up to be a systems analyst.
Whether you donate money or time, you're helping big brothers, big sisters help a child. And that can last a lifetime. Start something today at bigbrothersbigsisters.org. Brought to you by Big Brothers Big Sisters and the Ad Council.
You're listening to WPWC We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
Back with your world news on 1480 AM, WPWC We Act Radio, Washington's progressive working class. And I'm joined again with my co-host, Solomon Kamishong. Solomon, before we went to the break, we heard an excerpt from Dr. Martin Luther King's Beyond Vietnam speech. It perfectly relates to what's going on today in terms of they have all of this money. The U.S. outspends the next 10, 20 countries combined when it comes to military expenditures. There's all this money to go and devastate and destabilize and overthrow country after country after country. And yet the situation for poor and working class folks in this country continues to deteriorate year after year after year. And the disconnect, the incredible hypocrisy that's involved in there, where you have this elite, this ruling class that purports to care about freedom and democracy all over the globe, freedom and democracy at sword point, at gun point, at bomb point, at missile point, and can't even bring basic necessities to the table when it comes to the population right here in the U.S. I think that's one of the main things that we should take away from what Dr. King was trying to say in that speech. What do you think, Solomon?
I totally agree. And he also said, a couple different occasions, he said that any nation that, and make no bones about it, he was talking about the U.S., any nation that, you know, that routinely spends more money on its military or programs of defense, is headed for its spiritual doom. You know what I'm saying? I mean, those are very strong words, especially coming from, a man of the religious cloth as he was. I mean, those are very, very strong words. And you know, a lot of these so-called activists and you know, politicians and even educators, you know, in grammar schools to secondary to high schools to even college campuses, you know, conveniently ignore some of the statements and speeches that he gave in the last, you know, 3-4 years of his life. You know, they don't want to talk about the speech that he gave in SCLC delegates in Frogmore, South Carolina, where he spoke out. He in no uncertain terms spoke out against white supremacy. You know, and even within beyond Vietnam, he spoke out that, you know, he's come to a point where, you know, I quote, he says, "I've tried, you know, as I've walked among the desperate, rejected, and angry young men, I have told them that Molotov cocktails and rifles would not solve their problems. I tried to offer them my deepest compassion while maintaining my conviction that social change comes most meaningfully through nonviolent actions." But they ask, and rightfully so, what about Vietnam? They ask, they ask if our own nation wasn't using massive doses of violence to solve its problems to bring about the changes it wanted. Their questions hit home, and I knew I could never raise my voice against the violence of the oppressed in the ghettos without first spoken clearly to the greatest purveyor of violence in the world today, my own government. I mean, there is no equivocation or prevarication whatsoever in his words. I mean, it's right there, directly targeted at things that many of us have been programmed not to think about. This is a nation that is rooted in violence. I mean, its foundation is drenched with blood of Pequot, you know, Narragansett, you know, Native Americans, you know, Choctaw. I mean, we can go on and on to the 500, you know, First Nation people who found their home, you know, Turtle Island, you know, plundered and thieved away by, you know, European invaders.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, blood, I mean, men, women, and children, you know, were cut down and massacred left and right. This is a nation, how does this nation reward some of those folks that led those charges for genocide, Naveed? They put them on dollar bills.
Yep.
They put them on $20 bills. They put them on currency. They're given holidays, you know, and even those that never stepped foot on, you know, on U.S. so-called U.S. soil, those that committed those genocides throughout the Caribbean, you know, the likes of Christopher Columbus, given a federal holiday.
Mm-hmm.
So this is how violence is rewarded, Naveed. And I'll end on this: is that you're damn right. There is no, you know, the most basic of social needs and human and things that every human should be entitled to, you know, health care, quality universal health care is not even provided here in this country that has all the money in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, as you articulated, all the money in the world to bomb and destroy lives left and right. But when it comes to saving lives, as we know, 44,000 Americans each year die simply because of a lack of health care. But this country, and I will not use the pronoun we, because I am not a part of that we, mm-hmm. All right? Even though, unfortunately, my tax dollars are going toward that death and destruction, but I am not part of that we, that decision-making process. But this country has all the money in the world to take lives away, but does not want to invest that money to save lives, even within its own manufactured borders.
Right. I'm glad you brought up the fact that all these people that we celebrate, all these people that the U.S. state celebrates as its founders, as heroes, as the people who wrote the chapters of history. I mean, as you talked about just now, those pages are drenched in blood, and we're talking about people like Andrew Jackson, people who felt it his duty to go after the Seminoles in the south and east of the country, precisely for no other reason than that they violated his sensibilities and the sensibilities of the dominant culture because they were what you would call a triracial group, right? The Seminoles. They consisted of indigenous folks along with runaway Africans and whites who didn't want to become a part of the dominant society anymore. And for folks like Andrew Jackson, all of that was a no-no. He went after them and he pursued them and carried out a genocidal campaign against them and against a whole lot of other nations, a whole lot of indigenous nations. And we don't even have to go as far as the southeastern U.S. to take a look at what happened. Our studios, the WEAC Radio studios, are based out of Anacostia right here in D.C. And what's Anacostia named after? The Anacostite Indians, right? And what's Indian Head Highway? Like, what is, like, people, like, don't even think about the names of some of these places in this area. Indian Head Highway was literally marked by Indian heads. They cut their heads off, put them on pikes, and that's how the highway got its name. I don't want to get too off topic, but yeah, that's when you talk about the foundation of this country, that's what you're talking about, and that's some of the things you're right that Dr. King addressed. And as with a lot of figures that drew people to them, that galvanized them, that energized them, the system figured out that the best way to take care of this is by incorporating them, these people, into our narrative, defanging them, neutering them, making their image in some way, making their message in some way palatable, making it, mainstreaming it. In other words, forget all that other stuff that Dr. King said about workers' rights, about Vietnam. Forget the reasons why he went to jail. Forget all of the things that he said in the last 3 or 4 years of his life. Focus on the dream. I have a dream. And put that out there. Consistently put that out there and put nothing else out there about him. And make him your icon. Make him one of yours. Right? And MLK, he's not unique in this regard. We can also talk about Gandhi, right? And when you go internationally, another figure that is revered by our ruling elites and put out there as a figure for the rest of us to emulate,
right.
You know? And Gandhi was another man who, let's face it, had his shortcomings.
Yep, that's right.
He was not particularly not particularly fond of Africans, for one thing.
Exactly.
And in India, what's interesting is in India, his legacy is very much he's not the revered figure that he is among the liberal left here in the West. His legacy is very checkered, and the population of India is divided in terms of what they regard him as, right? But here, I mean, he's a saint. You know, he's the one that everybody should emulate.
Yeah.
And resistance movements all around the globe have to emulate Gandhi, otherwise they lose all legitimacy. Anyway, we need to go to a quick break again, and we'll be right back in a couple of minutes here on WEAC Radio, 1480 AM.
You're listening to WPWC, We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
Hi, I'm Curtis, and I'm so glad that I've got my own, you know, so glad that I can see. I've got a natural hide. The man can't put no thing on me, and he can't put no thing on you either. Keep your nose clean. Don't be no junkie. Remember, Freddy's dead.
The DC Sports Chat, Sundays at 7 p.m. on 1480 a.m. at weactradio.com.
We are very proud to be the only team to have won a Super Bowl with a black quarterback, even though there is a long, long history of racism in the team that is very shameful. George Preston Marshall refused to have black players on his team. He was the last team to integrate. And even though DC is changing, there's a lot of demographic shifts. This is Chocolate City. This is a black-run city, and I think it is significant that we have a black quarterback as the helm. I mean, I don't think that they are choosing him because he is a black quarterback, but he appears to be a sort of future guy to live up to. And to have that future black role model being in our nation's capital with our first black president, you know, in Chocolate City, I think that is an excellent extra bonus to be a Washington sports fan.
The DC Sports Chat, Sundays at 7 p.m. on 1480 a.m. at weactradio.com.
Our lives are affected every day by innovations from the minds of African Americans. Support the United Negro College Fund, because a mind is a terrible thing to waste. Visit uncf.org or call 1-800-332-UNCF. Brought to you by UNCF and the Ad Council.
Over 13 million people are affected by famine, war, and drought in the Horn of Africa. Text GIVE to 777-444 to donate $10. Brought to you by the Ad Council and USAID. Text donations go directly to Consortium of Humanitarian Relief Organizations. Standard text and data rates apply.
You're listening to WPWC, We Act Radio, 1480 AM, weactradio.com.
Back with your world news here on WEAC Radio, 1480 AM. WPWC, Washington's Progressive Working Class. With me again is my co-host, Solomon Kamishong. Solomon, I understand we have a special guest with us today who's going to be talking about some of the things that he's doing on his campus. Can you introduce him to us?
Yeah, definitely. He's in studio with me right now, and, his name is Tim Badoff Lynchen, and he's originally from Germany and then raised in the German-speaking side of Switzerland, and came to the U.S. just to go to college, and is now a part of the Justice at Maryland Coalition, which he'll expound upon more. But it's a coalition of students, of community members like yourself, Naveed. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a part of that as well. Alumni, Black Faculty and Staff Association here on the campus of University of Maryland. You know, workers themselves. And this coalition came about to fight the ongoing injustices on the campus of University of Maryland regarding it, the workplace, where countless workers have come out with testimonials of everything from sexual abuse, and the sexual abuse allegations and testimonials have all been from women of color, Black and Latina women, Black and brown women. You know, their xenophobia, you know, those who have chosen to speak out have been ostracized. They've used, you know, people's, you know, their status as people from you know, Spanish-speaking countries to threaten them that if you speak out, you know, you can lose your job, and this could be a means to an end in terms of sending you back, you know, to so-called where you came from, and this and the other. When in fact, really, the Spanish-speaking workers, I mean, their ancestors, you know, are the true, you know, the true owners of North America. But that's a whole other story. Mm-hmm. But you know, so the just the ridiculousness in those statements. But this kind of stuff has been going on. I mean, sexual abuse, racial, you know. Men and women of color being called the N word, you know, the S word, and I'll just say it, you know, nigger and spick. They've been called all these things, and it's just been, you know, just a hell for a lot of folks. And so students like Tim and so many other students have really come out to form this coalition, you know, for justice at the University of Maryland. So in studio is Tim. Tim, can you kind of giving you a little introduction about you, but can you talk about why you felt and continue to feel so compelled and to drive yourself week in and week out to be a part of this coalition?
I think it's very simple, and I just want to take it back to Martin Luther King's quote that you mentioned earlier, that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere, and that's exactly what I believe in. When I moved here from Switzerland, it didn't matter to me where I was from. I'm in this community now, and I'm a community member that's trying to uplift and help every community member in this community. And as you've mentioned, specifically female workers of color here on this campus are the ones who are most discriminated against and the most vulnerable at the same time. They're the women that put in the work at 4 a.m. in the morning continually while everyone is sleeping and doesn't even see them work, cleaning, excuse my language, the shit and the piss out of the toilets of our bathrooms every single day. And then they have to face continual abuse from their supervisors. Is that how we reward them? And that's the reason why I keep on fighting, because I realize that not only are these women community members of mine, but at the same time, they are my sisters and brothers that are being abused. And I will always stand up and fight for my sisters and brothers, no matter where this injustice is occurring, and I will never let them be treated the way they're being treated right now, which is compromising not only their physical health, but also their mental health, which is why we've started providing free psychological assistance to them, which the university has continually denied them, and which is why we continue to support programs such as the shuttle service, which the university had enforced in the 90s, but took away, leaving workers to walk across campus at 4 a.m. in the dark in the morning on their own, these women, and just being vulnerable to abuse. And that's exactly why I keep staying involved just because I feel a responsibility to protect my brothers and sisters who are working for us on this campus.
Right, right. Tim, let me ask you something. I know that the faculty, particularly the higher ups, have either ignored this situation or themselves have been a part of it. What has been the reaction in across the student body to what you all have been putting out there? Has there been acceptance? Has there been denial? Have the students themselves been some of these abusers or no?
Definitely. We've had cases where three students have walked into a bus and called a bus driver of color the N-word, and which actually turned into a criminal case where the police said that experience like this can threaten the other passengers of the bus if the bus driver has a psychological issue with that, which they rightfully should. And a lot of the times I'll be telling students about the abuse and they'll be like, oh, this isn't going on. Like, you got to be kidding me. Like, I don't even believe that. You know what I mean? And that's the type of propaganda that this university puts out when the administration puts out emails glorifying the university, how diverse it is, when in reality that diversity is not even true or celebrated at all. As a matter of fact, it's actually being suppressed in so many ways, where we still have the academic achievement gap for students, which is why we have programs like the Black Male Initiative to try to counter that, which is why we still have a lot of self-segregation. And just 2 days ago, on the anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination, we got an email from the administration that there was a noose found on campus, which just shows you how racist this school still is. And this student body is complacent as it can be. Our coalition has been fighting for years, and it's still only a handful of students that are really committed to this cause, even though people know that it's going on. We've been doing outreach, and we continue to do so, but students will listen to it, and it'll go in one ear and go out the other, and they'll continue, you know, watching their sports, buying their different products, and just being completely apathetic to the hell that their brothers and sisters are going through on this campus.
Yeah. And Tim, I wanted to ask you, you know, there's a form for people that are listening right now that want to, you know, that folks that don't allow apathy to overcome them, and they want to get involved. There's a form, I understand, that's coming up on the 20th. Can you tell us about this form, what it's going to consist of, and how people can get involved?
Yeah, definitely. So this forum is going to be on April 20th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. in the Numburu Cultural Center, and this is going to be the eighth forum that we've held of this kind. And what we do at these forums is we invite workers to tell their stories of abuse firsthand to the community so that we can actually see and hear examples of this abuse in person, and we can connect with these workers and try to build with them, because that's exactly what the university administration is trying to prevent, that the workers are united, that they are united with the student body, and that we can build with them, since all they're trying to do is give them the bare minimum. I mean, some of these workers qualify for food stamps. That just shows you that the government, which, as you just heard, is such a strong purveyor of violence and provides so minimal safety net programs for its citizens, even the government is providing these workers more than this university administration is right now with food stamp programs, for example. So that just gives you an idea of the gravity of the situation. So that's why we continue to have these forums, to raise these issues and to make people aware that these abuses continue to go on, no matter if the university administration keeps trying to sell us the lie that they're trying to do something against it, when in reality these abuses continue to occur over and over again, which is why we need to keep having these forums until they stop.
Yeah, I mean, it's amazing the difference between the perception, the image that the university puts out there about itself, and which is by and large accepted, and reality. The perception they put out there is we're this progressive campus, we're all about diversity, we're all about tolerance, we respect our workers, we respect, our students equally. And you talked about some of the things right now, the achievement gap, for example. It goes beyond that. We're talking about gradual bit by bit increases in tuition, and it's becoming less and less. University of Maryland is not becoming less and less of a public institution, and more and more. I'm fully confident that in 15 years' time, it'll be very hard to tell the difference between University of Maryland and Duke. It's becoming an elite institution, and it's becoming an institution that's less and less diverse in terms of class as well as in terms of race and ethnicity. And Duke has some degree of diversity when it comes to ethnicity and race, but certainly not in terms of class. And that's where we're going at UMD. And it's part and parcel of this, what you were talking about, the disbelief in a large portion of the student body when it comes to these issues as far as workers' rights, the abuse of workers. Oh, that can't be happening. We're here. We're good people. We wouldn't let this happen right under our noses. And that's exactly what's going on. And it's actually sickening. And it's unbelievable the degree of hubris that the administration has put out there with regards to the official narrative that just, by virtue of who they are, what they say is reality, and we're just supposed to accept it. And anybody else and any other narrative is inherently suspect. But anyway, Solomon?
Yeah. What you said, Naveed, man, when you said that, I couldn't help but think about, it sounds the same as the typical American when it comes to them speaking about their country and their country couldn't be a part of this. And there's that term that they use to reference that, the American exceptionalism,
right?
Which I prefer to call, being delusional.
Mm-hmm.
But, that American, I guess it could be Maryland exceptionalism. You know, this couldn't be happening on our campus, really? And then you hear these voices that then will routinely, come out and they'll say, how credible are these women? How credible are these, these black men that are speaking out? How credible are they? So the doubt is cast over, the victim, mm-hmm. Routinely, and they'll give, they'll give a pass, to those that are accused of whatever. And I'm not saying people don't, deserve their due process, but as we see in the cases of police brutality in this country, when there's a brother shot, when there's a black or brown man shot, they immediately, most people immediately say, what was he doing? What was he doing to deserve that? What did he do? What did he do? Did he charge a cop? Did he make some furtive movement? From his hands to it, from his pants pocket to it, coming out that made him seem like it was a gun. What was he doing? And it just amazes me, how the oppressor routinely in most cases gets a pass, from places like this, because people have bought into that. The propaganda is, Naveed, as it is thick, man. Mm-hmm. You wake up. Listen, if you have received no intervention and you're a little kid, you start your day off in most schools by saying something that's completely hypocritical. The Pledge of Allegiance, Pledge of Allegiance, and Justice for All, And so you're sitting there, and as an impressionable kid with a nascent mind, my country stands for injustice for all, and justice for all. And then you're getting bombarded with these false images, or incomplete profiles of individuals in your classes. So you're getting an incomplete profile of Columbus, of George Washington, who was a slave owner himself. He owned Africans, 300 plus Africans himself. And so you don't hear about that. You hear about these things. Oh, he wouldn't tell a lie. He chopped down the cherry tree and this, that, and the other. But you know, Naveed, I mean, we take us back to the time of George Washington, and if I was walking by his plantation just, you know, whistling, I mean, I would quickly be swept up onto his plantation and work there for the rest of my life unless I escaped or rebelled or something, you know what I'm saying? But these narratives are not told, the complete profiles of these individuals, these sociopaths, are not told. And so, you know, when by the time you get onto a college campus, if you have not gotten some intervention from a progressive parent or parents in your household or somebody in your community, you come in and you are now ready. Right. You're ready to take the next step, Naveed. You're ready to take the – now you're getting the formalized, you know, the formalized documented education. You know, at the end of that 4 years, you get that receipt, otherwise known as a degree, mm-hmm. and you got it, man. You go into your criminal justice classes. You're not learning about the ills of mass incarceration. You're learning about the pros of mass incarceration. Why it's good. Right. Why it's a good thing. Yeah, lock them up. They did the crime. They do the time. And so, right here on this on the very campus, University of Maryland, what Tim was saying is, you have all these injustices going on, but yet the university prides itself in saying that that diversity is within its DNA, and it's this bastion of social justice, and it is very intolerant when it comes to, you know, disrespect or hate crimes or these kind of things. But, you know, I would think that sexual abuse levied down on a Black or Latino woman, I would think that that would be a hate crime. I would think that that would be a hate crime called misogyny, hatred towards women. I would think so. I would think that calling a Black man out of his name, calling him a boy or the N-word, which I cannot tell you how many workers, you know, Black male workers have told me that they have been called that on the job. I would think that for somewhere around that would be tied, that would be anchored to hatred, you know. Mm-hmm. So, Tim, go on.
And not only does the university pride itself on diversity, it does so not only in complete delusion, but also specifically suppresses any counter voice to that, like a Justice at Maryland member who brought up the issue of worker abuse on our campus at an open forum just last week, and she was interrupted by our president, who said that this wasn't the time and place to speak about issues like that, and that we should talk to him or another university member on their own time, where we've been trying to do that pretty much throughout our existence, and it's taken months for the president to even get back to us, let alone do anything about it. So it is not only delusion that's going on here, but specifically suppression of any type of resistance that's going on campus right now.
Hmm. All right, we need to go to a quick break, and we'll be right back in a couple of minutes here on 1480 AM WEAC Radio, your world news.
You're listening to WPWC WEAC Radio, 1480 AM, WEACradio.com.
Local station WLS broadcast a radio host who repeatedly attacked a female student for no other reason than her participation in a public debate about women's health. She told elected officials about various ways her classmates rely on prescription birth control, including a story about a friend who takes it to manage ovarian cysts. For this, the radio host called her a slut, in addition to 45 other personal attacks.
Ms. Fluke, have you ever heard of not having sex?
She's having so much sex, it's amazing she can still walk.
She's having so much sex, she's going broke, buying contraceptives, and wants us to buy them.
It makes her a slut, right?
Makes her a prostitute. She wants to be paid to have sex. If we are going to pay for your contraceptives, and thus pay for you to have sex, we want you to post the videos online so we can all watch.
WLS shouldn't talk about women this way. Our community deserves better than this. This community service announcement was paid for by Media Matters for America.
You're listening to WPWC WEAC Radio, 1480 AM, WEACradio.com.
Back with your world news here on 1480 AM WEAC Radio with my co-host Solomon Kamishong and our guest Tim from the Justice at Maryland campaign at the University of Maryland. Salman, one thing you said reminded me of, I don't want to call it an anecdote, but something someone told me about Dr. Martin Luther King if he were alive today. You were saying that, like, if you were walking by George Washington's plantation, you would get swept up and you would be put to work in that plantation. And my friend was telling me that if Dr. King was alive today and he was walking around in some of these progressive liberal enclaves in this area, whether in Montgomery County, whether in Northern Virginia, or in some of these, you know, progressive gentrified neighborhoods in Northwest, if he was walking around after dark in those neighborhoods, they would call the police on him. The neighborhood watch would call the police on him in a heartbeat.
Yeah.
You know, he would get swept up. You know, progressive or not, there's just some things that, anyway, yeah.
You're exactly right, Naveed. Yeah. And what's funny also, like, you just prompted me to remember. And folks, you know, there's no one that speaks better for themselves than these individuals. So if this is news to you, what Naveed is talking about, what I'm talking about regarding King, there's a treasure trove of information in King's own words out there, speeches, the transcripts, where you can read them. You know what I'm saying? You know, reading books like Where Do We Go From Here? You know, Chaos of Community. I mean, read these books and you'll find out. We're not making this up. This is not lies. And so one of the things, Limbeed, since you just talked about, you know, these so-called progressives and the gentrified communities, is that we know that King, you know, also in his latter years, before his life was ripped away from him, through assassination, he was very critical of white liberals. He called them out. He was very, very critical of white liberals, you know, as was El Hajj Malik El Shabazz, Malcolm X, you know what I'm saying? So it's just, you know, it's interesting. So, like, you know, when you mentioned that, Naveed, I couldn't help but think about King's, you know, criticism of white liberals and also thinking about Malcolm X's criticism of white liberals. You know, that they're almost like wolves in sheep's clothing, you know what I'm saying? And you know, we need to recognize it as such. And Naveed, you know, since when Tim was talking, one of the other things I was thinking is that the evening before, so this would be a campaign that it's very, very safe for us to assume that if King was alive today, the King that was killed, the Martin Luther King that was killed April 4th, 1967,
mm-hmm.
was the same King that April 3rd, 1968, I should say, that same Martin Luther King, April 3rd, 1968, he was giving a speech to striking sanitation workers.
Mm-hmm.
And so we know of his, you know, his devotion to labor. We know about his work with things like Operation Breadbasket, you know, organizing black workers in places like Cleveland and other cities, you know, where, you know, they white industries had no problem going into black communities and building up, but they weren't trying to hire those black people from those same communities that they were building up infrastructure. And so Operation Breadbasket, hey, we boycott everything about them. We boycott them left and right, not a penny, you know. So King would have supported this effort on this campus. And so I wonder how he would be, you know, labeled by those who are in opposition to this kind of movement, those who have no qualms with the labor practices, that the workplace abuses that are going on, how they would label King. Probably very much so, like the same way LBJ and other, you know, so-called politicians in the U.S. labeled King after, you know, just like, you know, how you know, he was labeled by various news publications in the U.S. as the most hated man in America once he started speaking out against the Vietnam War, and he was not invited back to the White House when he started speaking out against the war. You know, these are the kind of little-known facts that folks want to talk about when it comes to LBJ, who was no stranger to using the N-word, you know. So, you know, I just want to put those 19 cents in there, Naveed.
No, absolutely. What we need to do is we need to reclaim these figures, these heroes. We need to reclaim them back as our own. Dr. King is a figure who has even been claimed by conservatives in recent years, you know, and we need to cut through all that nonsense. We need to put his own words, his message out there, and we need to make it clear who he was and what he stood for. Not some idle dreamer, not some figure who was trying to, take a slice of the American dream for himself and for his community. Dr. King was a revolutionary, and that needs to be made clear to everyone who hears the name Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He was not a figure of, by, and for the establishment, which many people seem to think today, which the establishment itself puts out there. We need to reclaim him as our own. To that extent, I know what Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. would be doing tomorrow, which is he would be joining a whole lot of other folks at the Million Hoodie March in Malcolm X Park. And for those of you who aren't aware of it, but who are aware, I'm assuming if you're listening to this program, you're aware of what happened to Trayvon Martin and at least some of the details involved in his case. Well, a lot of folks are coming together tomorrow noon at Malcolm X Park to commemorate this grave injustice that was done and demand that something be done about it. We're marching from Malcolm X Park to the Martin Luther King Jr. Memorial, and we're going to be convening or gathering at Malcolm X Park at noon. So I want people to know about it, and I want you all to come out for that. And also, we need to put this message out there as well. The Anacostia River and Jazz Festival on April 28th from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. at Anacostia Park Skating Pavilion. Please come out to that. All jazz lovers and park lovers, yeah, come out to that. Anacostia Park Skating Pavilion, April 28th, all day. So anyway, Solomon, do you have a couple of closing words for us?
And I just want to, there's also an announcement, today, folks that are listening live, there's going to be an injustice abolition meeting at the University of Maryland at the Nimbrua Cultural Center at 3 p.m. today, April 6th, 2012. One of the featured speakers is going to be Malcolm Shabazz, grandson of Malcolm X. If you can come out, there will be students that are a part of the Justice of Maryland Coalition. They'll be at this event today at the Nimbrua Cultural Center at 3 p.m. But, Naveed, I couldn't agree more. We have to reclaim King's legacy, the memorial that was put out there, last year is a complete farce because it was funded by the likes of Boeing. Coca-Cola. I mean, are you kidding me? Like, some of the multinational corporations that help fund that, are in the defense industry. The Coca-Cola that has a vast reputation of supporting the killing of trade union activists in places like Colombia and usurping and monopolizing water in places like India. I mean, so that kind of filthy money funding, that played a major role in funding that memorial, and then having warmongers, introduce him at that ceremony, like Biden and Obama. It was just a farce, and so we have to reclaim his legacy because far too many people saw that and saw nothing wrong with it, Naveed, because they've been educated, they have a limited education or knowledge of Dr. King because of the limited and the methodic and purposeful limiting and posthumous assassination of his life. It's like he's been killed a second time, the way that the number they've done on his name and his reputation as a human rights activist. So I couldn't agree more with you, Naveed, I think that, and lastly, I'll also say that the march tomorrow is also important, the Million Hoodie and Hijab March, because we know that there was an Iraqi-American woman in California who was beaten to death, brutally beaten to death, and the murderer, murderer, left a note near her body saying, go back to your country, you terrorist. And so we need to start connecting the deaths of people like that and the deaths of Trayvon Martin and the deaths of Ayanna Stanley Jones and Sean Bell and Oscar Grant. We need to start also connecting them to the deaths of countless children in places like Yemen, Libya, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Iraq. Those are children that are being murdered just like Trayvon Martin was murdered, all right? But, they're being murdered, but by way of missiles and night raids, you know, and we're not connecting the dots, Naveed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, folks are not, the same way they're not connecting the dots to the real king, they're not connecting the dots about those kind of injustices, because
mm-hmm.
those are children as well, and they have lost, they've been murdered by missiles, you know, missiles that say made in the USA on them, and their lives are no more. So it's something that we really need to think about, and the economic starvation by way of sanctions and the economic starvation in so-called ghettos in the U.S., or I prefer to call them governmentally neglected communities. These communities have been starved, and lives, countless lives have been lost because of economic starvation in the U.S., and countless lives have been lost throughout the world in places like Iraq, where 500,000 children perished in the 90s by way of United Nations and U.S. Sanctions on that country.
Well said, Solomon. All right, we come to the end of another episode of Your World News here on WEAC Radio 1480 AM. Join us again next week, same time, Friday, 11 a.m. for Your World News. Been a pleasure having my co-host Solomon Kamishan with me today, as well as our special guest Tim from Justice of Maryland. And me and Solomon will be back again next week with another episode of Your World News on 1480 WEAC Radio.
Movement, music, move it to us. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life. Movement, music, move it to us. Put a fist up, prove it to us. This is much more than music to us. This is beauty and strength. And if you know about the music, then you know about life.
Word is
any kind of activity that takes place on the floor of the Congress or the Senate, that's the government. Any kind of dilly-dallying, that's the government. Any kind of pussy-footing, that's the government.